I want to talk this morning about compassion and empathy, which seem very similar, but actually can be different in important ways. And this is relevant if we're a human being. This is relevant if we're in any way caring, a caretaker for others, elderly people, or you're in the helping professions, or you're a parent, or you have friends. I think this is hopefully relevant. And a friend of mine is just, we were talking about how hard it is to hold, how much suffering there is in the world. And, you know, he often goes into despair, hopelessness, helplessness. And I was wondering if maybe he was feeling too much empathy and not enough compassion. And, you know, this might sound a little controversial, too much empathy for the pain in the world. So I want to just kind of explore this interesting terrain of empathy and compassion. Another friend involved in the conversation thought, well, this is just splitting hairs. The world needs a ton of empathy and a ton of compassion. Why even make this distinction? And so it's actually important to make this distinction. Both compassion and empathy involve the empathetic response of being able to feel in our heart what someone else is going through emotionally, right? We all know this. We can, you know, really put ourselves in someone else's shoes, and this is great human ability to feel what others feel, and we feel it from their perspective, not from ours. Sympathy is a little bit more feeling someone's pain from our perspective, which sometimes is helpful. Sometimes people need our perspective, but often what people want is empathy. They just want someone else to understand them and feel their pain. So Merriam-Webster Dictionary says that compassion and empathy both refer to a caring response to someone else's distress, while empathy refers to an active sharing in the emotional experience of the other person. Compassion adds to that emotional experience a desire to alleviate the person's distress. That's a very simple, clear definition of the difference. Compassion includes empathy, but goes further by adding the wish that someone be free of their pain. And most people say compassion also includes the willingness to help. And, you know, in Buddhist practice, compassion really is feeling someone's pain and then adding the wish that someone be free. So that accords pretty well with the Webster definition. And what's interesting is that research on these two states shows that what seems to be very similar actually function very differently in the brain and in life. Empathy activates the emotional centers of our brain, while compassion activates the centers for learning and reward. And again, remember, compassion includes empathy, but it goes further. So it probably includes the, you know, emotional centers of the brain as well, but it adds in activity in the learning and reward areas of the brain. So we probably all understand that there is such a thing as too much empathy. We can get overwhelmed by someone's pain or the pain of the world. We can, you know, be very distressed by it. And when we experience something as distressing, it might feel to us like a threat. And that puts the brain in its much more primitive fight-flight mode. And so brain studies show this. neuroscientists Tanya Singer and Olga Klimeki conducted studies comparing empathy and compassion. So they had two different groups of people trained in both empathy practice and compassion practice. And so they found these differences in brain activity. They also found that practicing empathy and practicing compassion lead to different emotions and different attitudes towards action. The empathy trained group could, you know, actually found at times that empathy was difficult. The compassion group, on the other hand, actually found that practicing compassion, which is taking in someone's pain and wishing them to be free of it, this practice actually created positivity in the brain. The compassion group ended up feeling kinder and more willing to help than those who were in the empathy group. So opening to pain creates learning and reward in the brain, creates positivity in the brain. And, you know, this aligns very closely with what the Dalai Lama says. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. The practice of compassion actually, instead of sort of defeating us and dispiriting us, creates well-being in the brain and the heart. A last distinction is that compassion accesses the more conscious areas of the brain, prefrontal cortex, whereas empathy accesses the more automatic and more unconscious parts of the brain. So empathy is really more almost an automatic response. We just can feel, I mean, it's a wonderful thing that we can feel the pain of somebody. And compassion takes that empathy, but also brings it into the more conscious parts of the brain. And with the conscious access of compassion, we can consciously feel ourselves connecting with another. We can feel our caring heart. And what's really interesting, if you do compassion meditation, which we'll do just a little bit of, this connection and care actually keeps us buoyant. You know, the pain that we all feel is so human. And when we open to someone's pain, we're really feeling we're feeling their pain, but we're also feeling the pain. We're just feeling our shared humanity. And so it's beautiful. It's beautiful to have this empathic response that's kind of tempered by compassion. This connection and care keeps us buoyant. We don't drown in someone's sorrow with compassion. And a drowning person can't help a drowning person. It's not helpful to drown in someone else's sorrow. It won't help them, right? We need to be buoyant. So there's one last issue with empathy. And that is that it tends to be stronger for those we know better and feel closer to. And so I'm not saying this happens with empathy, but it can happen. It can create kind of an in and an out group. And again, you know, it's accessing more the kind of automatic parts of our mind. Compassion, in accessing more of the frontal cortex, you know, gives us choice. It's less automatic. And we can see in Buddhist practice, we see this, we can extend compassion to all beings. So, in saying all this, this is not to bash empathy. It's an incredibly helpful skill of our heart and mind, and does so much to create connection with others. And I notice if I've caused harm and someone says, ouch, to me, if I focus on what I did wrong and, you know, what's wrong with me, that's not empathy. And that'll lead to defensiveness. And, you know, I won't make that connection. If I feel empathic, then I'm willing to just like set aside what I did and feel someone else's experience. And then I can learn from that. Oh, but it takes empathy to get out of our defensiveness. So empathy is a beautiful, beautiful skill. It's just that there can be too much of it. And the helping professions has this term, compassion fatigue, burnout. We can be burned out by always, you know, empathically responding to people's pain. But, you know, it might be empathy fatigue is a better term, because compassion uplifts our heart. There can be too much empathy. Not sure if there can be too much compassion. Again, it's the connection and the care of compassion that lift our heart. So this is really important in dealing with the pain of the world. It's so hard. There's so much pain. And both empathy and compassion help us shift the paradigm. We want to avoid pain. Empathy and compassion both help us turn towards pain. And so empathy is a great start, we might say. It may not be enough. And, you know, to discern, when do you feel overwhelmed? When do you feel burned out in your care for others? And then you can actively do something. You can really switch. You can include the empathy, but extend it into compassion by just the simple wish, may you be free from your pain and sorrow. And so in compassion practice, the meditative practice of compassion, one of the four Brahma Viharas, or the, you know, the set of practices that includes metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. In compassion practice, there's so much kindness built into it. In the practice is the understanding that we have limits to our empathy and our compassion. And we have to start with what's easy. And when we do that, when we have this self-respect to recognize our own limits, and then we work with what we're able to open to, then over time, we can gradually expand our capacity to open to more pain. When we do compassion practice, we need to notice when there's too much empathy, when we feel distressed, overwhelmed. You know, if we're drowning, we're not in compassion. Again, drowning creates compassion creates positivity in the brain. It just feels so good to connect to someone and wish them well. And then in compassion practice, very important that it's not a conceptual practice, it's a heart practice. And so we don't need all the nuance and ins and outs of a person's story and the story of their pain. You know, we can very much want to be in fix-it mode. And fix-it mode actually short-circuits empathy. We won't feel someone's pain because we're too busy trying to fix it. And often that fixing it mode, you know, isn't helpful to somebody. Sometimes it is, but we always need to know, you know, when is it a time to just feel and be empathic, and when is it a time to give this help of fixing. So we want to, in compassion practice, and we'll do a little bit now, We want to check out of the head and land in the heart. The head language is all the nuance and ins and outs and what ifs and buts and doubts and this and that. The heart language is just the simple pain, the simple reality of someone's pain. And then this compassionate response, which is like awe, right? We just feel this compassion. When my mom died almost 6 years ago now, it's shocking it's been that long. Her last year of life was so hard for her because she was a real actively engaged person who helped. She loved being of help. And she couldn't be of help anymore. You know, she told me once, I just spend my whole day getting through my day. And it caused so much compassion in my heart. And I did a lot of compassion practice for her in her last year. And it just helped me feel so connected to her. And, you know, maybe it's as simple as in empathy, we feel someone's pain, which is great. And then in compassion, we enfold their pain with our love by sending them this kind wish. May you be free from suffering. So let's do a little compassion practice just to end here. So if you would, close your eyes and just bring to mind somebody who's struggling in some way, and it's easy for you to connect to them. Right? It's not complex, it's simple. So bring them to mind. And yes, there's an empathic response. We need to open to their pain, be willing to feel it. And then we send them a kind wish. And classically, the way I've learned compassion practice, there's two phrases. And one is, I care about your pain. Second is, may you be free from suffering. So just picture this person, feel their pain, and wish them well. I care about your pain. May you be free from suffering. And change the language. You know, if it feels a little fake to say, I care about your pain, maybe you're just not quite in that heart space. You can say, I feel your pain. I see your pain. I'm aware of your pain. Whatever language works. I'll continue with the classical phrase, I care about this pain. May you be free from suffering. And you're meditating, so it's not about elaborating the story. Just understand the simple story and keep the phrases going in your own rhythm. Care about your pain, may be free from suffering.